In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with gut health specialist Lindsay Little. Lindsay and I speak about what our bathroom habits can tell us about our health, why crummy digestion can lead to higher cravings, and how we can go from bloated and backed up to feeling energized and lean. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Lindsay, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Lindsay. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with gut health specialist Lindsay Little from Fallbloom Acres. Lindsay, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you on.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I would love to just start off with your story that led you to what you do today. But I will tease a little bit because, or will give people a little bit of a teaser because before I jump on a show with anybody, just as a background info for anyone listening, I usually have people fill in a bit of a questionnaire, just what they do and so on. And Lindsay's description was she helps people go from being backed up and bloated to feeling smoking hot for date night, even if you're experiencing difficult symptoms of hormone balance or menopause. And I just loved that. I hope that gives people a bit of an idea of what we're going to be speaking about today. So thank you for giving us a bit of a preview. And yeah, Lindsay, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much again, Lisa, for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you and everyone listening. So just again, my name is Lindsay Little, and I'm a holistic health coach, and I'm a gut health practitioner, gut health specialist. And I help high achieving women, busy career women, resolve embarrassing digestive issues, lose weight, and balance their hormones. And, you know, like a lot of other practitioners in the holistic space, you know, I got here through my own journey and my own story. So it's very common amongst practitioners here. So I'll just kind of give a brief overview. This can be a long story, but we'll keep it short today. Basically, when I look back at my life, I really believe that for my entire life, I've been suffering with digestive issues. I just didn't put the pieces together until very recently. So my kind of the wake up call I had was about 10 years ago. So right around the time I was almost 30 and I was working a really, really demanding job, crazy hours. I was driving a lot in between meetings. So I was eating in my car a lot. I was eating out a lot. And quite frankly, I wasn't taking care of myself at all, pretty much. And I had gained a lot of weight. I felt miserable just all the time. I couldn't sleep. I was, you know, not pleasant to be around. I'll admit that. And I just generally felt terrible. Every food I ate made me feel worse. So I was just stuck in this loop of what can I eat? And I suffered like that for far too long. But one day I was driving from a meeting to another meeting downtown Milwaukee. And I was literally driving on the freeway and I almost fell asleep. And it was so scary. I had to pull over on the side of the freeway and take a nap, and which is not cool. Like, don't do that. That's not a great thing to do, right? Either is falling asleep behind the wheel, of course. So that was kind of my, what I call my rock bottom. That was my wake up call. So I made an appointment with my doctor and went there, rattled off all my symptoms, all the things that were bugging me. And her response was, well, I think you just need to get some sleep and drink some water. And I know my face, like my jaw must have just hit the floor when she said that because I couldn't sleep. And that's the worst advice to give to someone who can't sleep, right? I wouldn't be there if I knew how to do that. So she then decided to try to write me three different prescriptions. And even though, you know, there again, my jaw must have dropped to the floor because 2 minutes before that, she told me I was perfectly healthy. So that just didn't jive with me. There's a time and a place for medication, of course, but we weren't there. I didn't feel. So I left that appointment just on a mission to DIY my own health. And I took all the courses, you know, did all the self-help books, all the weird diets, all the weird supplements. I did work with a couple alternative health practitioners that got me further than I could go myself, but still didn't get me all the way there. So I thought maybe if I learned about what's actually going on in my body, I could help myself. And that led me down the road to go to grad school. And I actually got my master's degree in holistic nutrition. And because I guess, if you're going to do it, why not go all in? I guess. So I went to grad school, and that did help teach me really just a lot about the human body and nutrition. But it got me far enough to be able to open my health coaching practice and help other women, but there's still something there. There still was something amiss. And as I was working with my first coaching clients, I was realizing they all had digestive issues too. So we were experiencing very similar things. And that I literally stumbled into the field of gut health and the gut microbiome. And when I did that, it was like, cue the lights and the, cue that music. It was the total aha moment for me. And since then, I haven't gone back. I just love the gut, and I love learning all I can with it.
Amazing. Well, as you said, I think the best coaches are usually born out of their own necessity or their own struggles. So yeah, before we continue on with like various methods and what you did in order to fix your own gut health, maybe you can give us a little bit of a definition. Like that sounds weird, but like what does a healthy gut actually look like? Like how what kind of bloating or fullness is quote unquote normal. How many times a day should we go to the bathroom? Like all these kinds of things. Because sometimes we think, oh, isn't that normal? But just because it's been going on for so long and you don't actually know what's like how much better it could be potentially.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And so I'm so glad you asked that. So I guess first off, let me just say, when I talk about the gut, I'm talking about your colon or your large intestine. And some practitioners will talk about the gut, meaning your entire digestive tract, so from your mouth all the way down. And of course that is, they all play a part in digestion, but I like to focus on your colon or that large intestine, because that's where really the largest concentration, trillions and trillions of microbes live down there. And that's where the biggest opportunity is for things to kind of go wrong. So, what the point of digestion really is to break down food that we eat and use it as energy and take those nutrients from that food, put it in the cells, put it in the body tissue, and it is how we survive. If that process breaks down on, a biological level, our bodies struggle. And the human body is fascinating because it can compensate for so many things. But when we are constantly bombarding it from every direction, we're like throwing these punches at your large intestine, your whole digestive tract, it's going to start to break down eventually. So I always tell people, some bloating is normal. Someone's always going to get constipated sometime, right? Diarrhea happens sometimes. Things like that happen. But when it's every day, or when it's really disrupting your life, that's when it's kind of this red flag from your body. It's a sign that your body's saying, help me, I need something from you. Because it can go on autopilot, right? And a lot of times what I find is we're not taught how to listen to those red flags. So those red flags, that constipation, maybe you haven't gone to the bathroom in a week, haven't had a bowel movement in a week or several days, and that just becomes, quote unquote, normal for you. But if we really start to listen, that is a red flag from your body. That's not normal. That's not how the body's supposed to work. Typically, we want people to be going to the bathroom at least once a day. A healthy digestive system will be having a bowel movement at least once a day, sometimes more, depending on how much fiber you're eating. But that's really what we're shooting for. So when things happen that just make you feel crummy, and make it so you're avoiding going out for drinks with friends or going to the gym because you can't imagine doing crunches when you're so bloated, or just putting on yoga pants. You know, those are those little things. They seem so small, but you know, that's a sign. That's your gut. That's your body saying, hey, you know, pay attention. Listen up here. So
That's
that
no, that's a
answer.
good, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so
Okay,
much.
good.
That's a great kind of like foundational baseline, I think, for people to think of. And one other thing that you talk about in on your content, your social media, which I of course I'm going to link for people to check out as well, is how like actually going to the bathroom is sort of like a report card almost, or like it's an indicator of our overall health. So maybe you can explain to us how we could assess that. I mean, you already said going once a day, yes, but I think it extends beyond that because, of course, if we go all the time, but it's more like rabbit poop or so, that's not good either. Or if we have floating stool, or, you know, like how can we really use that as a health indicator?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And I will say that I talk about this all day long, almost every day. So this is one of those topics. If you would have asked me when I was a kid, what will you do when you grow up? It never would have been talk about poop all day long with total strangers on the internet. But here we are. And it is amazing because it's something that we need to talk more about. It's seen as this kind of taboo thing, especially as women. Don't talk about that. Don't, you know, it's gross. It's disgusting. Well, it's something natural that the body does. And really, it is such an indicator of overall health. You know, I think it's almost as important as monitoring your heart rate or, you know, your weight or things like that. Your just basic biometric feedback that your body's giving you. I really think those bowel movements are right up there, and we ignore it. We literally are flushing this data down the toilet. And that, so I'm on a mission to stop that. So why is this important, and kind of what can we learn from looking in the toilet? And that's the first step. We need to start looking. And it seems weird. It does. I will give it that. And usually when people say that, they just, you know, they're kind of like, are you serious? Like, this is weird. But the thing is, once you get in the habit of it's something you do. And it is going to be such a good indicator because your stool consistency will change so much. And it's often the one of the first signs that, you know, that red flag is coming up from your body that something needs to be changed. So when we have something like little rabbit pellet poops, right? That's going to be an indicator of slow bowel movement, meaning constipation likely. But a lot of people, that's normal. So something to kind of watch for is if all of a sudden you are one of the people with those rabbit poops and it all of a sudden one day starts to be diarrhea, it goes to the other extreme. And then that's kind of a red flag, that change. Okay, something's wrong. Not necessarily, you know, I don't want to scare anyone, but it's just an indicator that something has changed. So the same thing with, you know, if you typically have loose stools, well, that would be quick bowel movements or quick bowel motility. There we go. So we want, you know, where things are coming out, they're exiting the body quicker than they should be. So things are not getting absorbed. And so diarrhea is quick exit time, constipation is slow exit time. And that's really, really important. We want to be right in the middle. We want to be, you know, without getting super graphic, we just want it to be solid. We want it to be ideally kind of S-shaped. That would be perfect. And yeah, there are charts. I do have a chart on my computer.
I will make sure to link that. I'm familiar with the Bristol stool chart as well, which I've mentioned on the show before. The listeners might be familiar with that, and that's actually quite a good visual indication of like, okay, and where am I at on the spectrum? And as you said, some fluctuations are normal because most people, they don't just eat the same exact thing every single day. I mean, most people have somewhat staples. Like I'm pretty consistent with having the same breakfast or even similar or same lunch because it's just quick and easy. But overall, there will be some fluctuations, especially if you eat out from time to time. It might be higher in sodium, or if you have a, pizza night or whatever, that might make it quicker because you have less fiber. So all these things, there will be fluctuations. I also sometimes, when I try to talk to clients about, let's up your fiber or so, and then 2 days later, I see them eating like double the quantity, and then suddenly they get backed up because it's just too quick of an increase. So, of course, we want to be cautious with that too. And as you said, one end of the spectrum, so like diarrhea versus a constipation, we can kind of combat that with various types of fiber because we have the insoluble and the soluble, and one of them actually thickens the stool and the other one helps a little bit speed things up. So maybe you can go into which one might be helpful for what, or just in general what your top sources and recommendations are for alleviating one or the other.
Yeah, that's a great question. So fiber, of course, is such an important nutrient, and it is one of those that just in general, the American population is very deficient in overall. It is very, common for people to be not even hitting the recommended daily fiber intake. And fiber, of course, only comes from plants. So animal products do not contain fiber. So we are talking about fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes, things like that. We're not talking about meat. We're not talking about dairy. They don't have fiber unless somewhere along the lines they were, it was added or fortified in there. But we really need to be eating those plants. And that is something when I work with someone on just improving gut health in general, I typically don't get too in the weeds with soluble versus insoluble fiber because it can get really challenging for people to be sitting there and reading all those labels and counting, trying to do this mental math. And of course, like if we need to get into that, we absolutely will. And it's just it I find that so many people are just not eating enough in general. So what I have people do is actually start counting the number of plants that they eat each week and different plants. So if you eat blueberries every day of the week, that counts as one plant. But if you have a different berry each week or each day of the week, I'm sorry, that would count, as five different berries or whatever the case is. And the reason for that is every single plant has such a wide variety of different fibers in it. It's not just, oh, well, this one has insoluble fiber and this one has soluble fiber, this one has that and the other one has this. They all have a bunch of different things. And so we know that those who eat the widest variety of plants actually have the healthier gut because different gut bugs eat different fibers. So you might have like broccoli loving microbes down there. And so if you stop eating broccoli, they will, we're not sure if they die off or kind of just go dormant, but they're not as predominant. So then all of a sudden you start eating broccoli again and your gut is like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like, I can't digest this. So you get gassy and bloated, maybe some constipation. But the other gut bugs down there will try to compensate, but they're not like, yay, I love broccoli. This is my jam. So eventually, if you start to train your gut, just like you would train your biceps, any other muscle group, starting low and slow. So, maybe it's one piece of broccoli every day for a week, and maybe that will increase those good gut bugs that digest the broccoli. And then you can kind of work your way up to it. So,
Yeah, I
yeah,
think
I think.
that's a really good point. And as you said, the majority of people really do not get enough fiber. We will have a few people listening that are backed up because of too much fiber, like especially in the dieting space. If you're used to, well, I'm constantly hungry, I'm eating these huge bowls of whatever raw vegetables and so on. I often say in that instance, as you mentioned, then it's worth looking into, okay, what kind of sources do we have? And even like
Exactly.
a matter of how we prepare it can make a difference. So if you're used to eating a lot of raw stuff, starting to cook that or make it into a soup or smoothie or so can help you as well. But yeah, as you said, like if we're looking at the big picture, most people are probably not getting enough. So I like that you're approaching it more from like a simple angle and what serves the broad masses. One last question on this topic of like diarrhea versus constipation. I do think sometimes it's also important to highlight that, especially as women, we go through various phases in our cycle, obviously, especially if we're not on hormonal birth control, and that has an effect too. So I would say even if someone has a somewhat of a consistency for themselves, they will see that throughout the month, it's not always going to be the same. So for example, for many women, like pre-period, I would assume it's more normal to be a little bit constipated or then around ovulation to have more looser stool or just more frequent bowel movements. Is that what you observe and educate in your practice as well?
Yes, absolutely. And that is exactly what I see too. And that really goes back to everyone has their own normal, their own pattern. And yeah, definitely throughout the month, it changes. It really can change. And if you're not keeping track of that, like it's not like you need to be tracking this forever, but it is a good idea maybe for a month or two to just, like a food journal, you make a note in there. I have my clients, I have a section on the food journal I give to them. What kind of poop? What did it look like? And that teaches us to kind of start looking, but also to recognize those patterns. Oh, my period's coming. So, yep, here's the constipation, or here's the diarrhea. Like some people will be opposite with that. And that's great to know because then if something changes with that pattern, then you can see, oh, yeah, this is something's up. And then you can bring all that information to your practitioner and you will be gold star client.
No, that's such a good point. Like, honestly, data is so helpful for even just awareness. So, and as you mentioned, like, is that normal or not normal? So sometimes I might have a few days where I'm a bit more backed up and I'm like, oh, what's going on? Did I eat anything different? I'm like, oh no, wait, my period is coming. But if that would
Exactly.
extend past 3, 4 days, then I might get curious and be like, why is this happening? So yes, very good point. And something else I wanted to dig into, because you mentioned earlier that if we have poor digestion and so on, for you, for example, it led to having different food cravings as well, like for things like donuts or cupcakes or pizza or whatever. Why is that? Like, what's the starting point? Do we have the craving first and then the poor digestion, or the poor digestion and then the craving? How is that connected?
So that's kind of a complicated topic, really, because there are so many things that can contribute to really intense food cravings. And, it's kind of this hamster wheel, right? You all of a sudden have a craving, so then you eat whatever that is. Maybe it's you eat half a pizza by yourself, and then you feel really crummy, and then that triggers, well, I already ate half a pizza for lunch. I'm just going to eat, a pint of ice cream for dinner. And it's this like hamster wheel, and it's really hard to get off of. So really, what's going on with those cravings? For many, there's a lot of different facets, but for many people, it starts with your gut bugs. So your gut bugs, like we kind of talked about with the broccoli example, if you're eating a lot of plants, a lot of fiber, a lot of healthy foods, you develop a preference in your gut for those good gut bugs, and you're going to have more of them. The opposite is also true. The foods that you eat the most of, that's what your gut adapts to because it's smart, it's brilliant at adapting to the situation. So if you're eating a lot of pizza, you're going to have these gut bugs that prefer the pizza, on a very simplified way to look at it, but you're going to have those pizza guys that really like the pizza. They don't like broccoli. So their preferred food source is, those greasy, sugary, salty foods. So that's what they want. So they're going to crave more of it. So then, in turn, you eat more pizza. And that, they produce those because all of our gut bugs produce waste products, just like us. The good guys produce good waste products called postbiotics, and those are really gold for overall health. It's a fascinating new kind of discovery recently getting into that field. But the bad gut bugs, on the other hand, their waste products are basically contributing to inflammation and eventually can lead to disease. So it's this hamster wheel of I eat the pizza, so my gut bugs, the bad, quote unquote bad guys, are going to proliferate and really, start to multiply because that's what you're feeding them. And so then they're going to crave more pizza, or it could be cupcakes, it could be sugar. And it's this hamster wheel. And then we throw into that blood sugar regulation too, because the two are so closely tied. We really can't talk about gut health without talking about blood sugar regulation. But those really intense cravings can also come from unregulated blood sugar. So when we eat something like ice cream, it's going to spike your blood sugar way up there. And then the fun part is that it spikes it way back down the other direction, way past your normal level. So then your body sends up this red flag and is like, hey, my blood sugar is low. Eat something with sugar or starch or carby. So eat another cupcake or eat more ice cream. So then you do. So it spikes way back up. And then it drops away down past normal again. And it's this constant, like up and down, that's exhausting. Not just for people with, blood sugar or diabetes or pre-diabetes. This is for everyone. This is just how the body works. So then
Well,
you have
going back to
cravings.
your story, actually, right? Like that's what
Right.
put you into the napping position right next to the highway. And that makes
Yes.
complete sense. And even just like that highlighting of what you were saying at the time, you had a diet that was, you were eating out a lot. That means a lot more processed things, more sugars, more refined oils. You were stressed, you mentioned. And that's, I will say, that amongst my clients that have poor digestion, those are two of the most common themes: high stress life and high or a lot of eating out, a lot of not homemade foods and processed foods. Those two things are probably the most, what I observe anyway, the most common culprits for gut health, in my opinion.
I would totally agree with that
Yeah,
completely.
and you mentioned to me before we recorded or wrote down that you have a wonderful protein first or protein forward recipe guide as well. And I will link that in the show notes because as you're talking about blood sugar control, and the listeners will be familiar or will at least have heard on this podcast before, that one of the things to help us control our blood sugar better is including more protein in our meals or having protein before we have a simple carb. Let's say we want to have some of the bread in the middle of the table when we're in a restaurant, maybe waiting until you get your salad and your chicken breast and then having a slice or two of bread. That's a great way where you can still enjoy these more simple and low fiber foods without getting that extreme spike in the blood sugar. That's what I've observed anyway.
Yes, absolutely. And that's something that I talk about a lot too
Love
with
it.
my trainings and this recipe book too that you mentioned. And it's these little tweaks for a lot of people. If we can just make these small tweaks, like eating the protein and fiber first and then the bread, it has such a profound and immediate reaction in the body. And there, people have done research with it. It's out there. People, who are wearing continuous glucose monitors have the data. You can see it, but you don't even really need to. You can try it and see how you feel with it too, because that is something personally for me, and my clients have told me the same thing when we focus on blood sugar, that that's something, within a week, they can notice a difference. And it's just one of those things, like, let's just give it a try. Let's see if, it's free, it is non-invasive, and it is so easy to do. So I love that. The order of your food is so, so huge.
Yeah, and one other easy thing that you speak about and that ties back to the previous topic, which I forgot to touch on, was keeping the fiber, because we were speaking about insoluble, soluble fiber, etc., keeping the fiber and hydration in balance. And I think you do a good job of like highlighting that both are important. You can't like really increase your fiber, but then you might only be drinking like 50 ounces a day or so, then you're just going to be just as backed up, maybe even more. And we really need to bring that hydration up there as well. And sometimes with the hydration, also some electrolytes. What kind of hydration guidelines do you personally like to give? Or also in terms of electrolytes, is there anything that you recommend?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. And I one of the top things when someone comes to me and they're constipated, we need to drink water, we need to eat some fiber, but we need to do both and we need to do it slowly. So I think where the good old-fashioned drink more water advice kind of goes wrong is someone who's not drinking water to begin with. Maybe they're having, a sip or two here and there, but they're drinking a lot of soda or drinking a lot of coffee, things like that. They're not drinking water. And so then all of a sudden they hear, let's drink a gallon. You need to drink a gallon of water every day. And it's like, if you go from, zero basically up to a gallon of water, you are just going to be peeing it out constantly. And because your body is going to be like, whoa, what is this? What is happening here? And it needs the water. But it needs to use it efficiently because what happens as well, if you are just drinking way too much water, even and not absorbing it, it's going to pull things out. It's going to pull minerals out. It can pull magnesium, potassium out of your body too with it. And we don't want that, right? So we need to get the body to utilize the water so that it makes sense. Otherwise, you're just drinking water to, spend all day in the bathroom, and no one wants to do that. So typically, I've seen recent research kind of go back and forth with how much water are we supposed to drink. And I think every practitioner kind of has their own guidelines with it. I like to see people drinking at least half of their body weight in ounces of water every day, depending on activity level. If you're super active and if you're working out a lot and sweating a lot, yeah, a gallon of water a day is probably more realistic for you. Start drinking a gallon of water just to drink a gallon of water.
Well,
So
that's a really good point. And I mean, a lot of people, they might really be on, at least the majority of people, I would say, are probably on the lower end. And so just gradually increasing it and seeing how your body takes it, I think that's always a good point. And I think even if we start incorporating more of those vegetables and nuts and seeds and so on, we're automatically gonna stay more on top of our magnesium as well, probably getting more potassium. So I think the majority of people don't actually need like an electrolyte supplement unless they really sweat a lot. And with those whole foods, if we salt them, then we're getting enough sodium, which tends to be, again, like the one thing, if you do sweat a lot, I would say that's something to pay attention to. But if we're having a pretty processed diet, most people are actually getting too much sodium. So yeah, I'm very cautious with like recommending electrolyte supplements. I do see a lot of people just generally saying, oh yeah, I take one or two of those per day. A, they're really expensive for what they are, in my opinion. And B, let's just focus on the big rocks like the vegetables, where we can also find the magnesium and so on. But yeah, as another question, I do find that sometimes we see those symptoms actually get worse during menopause or perimenopause, or just in general when hormonal imbalances are pregnant, pregnant present. Why does that happen, or how can we stay on top of that?
Yeah, so that is such a great area to be looking into right now. And there's not, up until recently, there's not a lot of research being done in that population. And it for women in general, really, we're very underrepresented in research. But I love that more and more people are talking about perimenopause and menopause now because it's kind of like, you're just sent into this time of your life, and you're just assuming that you're supposed to feel terrible all the time, and that's not the truth. You know that we can do a lot, and I think it's really important to understand that your hormones and your gut are a direct reflection of each other. So when you're going through these hormonal changes, which are totally natural, it's totally natural. It's just part of being a woman, right? To go through menopause. Your hormones are changing. Estrogen is declining. Things are changing in your body, but that causes changes in your gut as well. So that's where, if we just immediately jump to let's fix the hormones, quote, fix the hormone issue, we are forgetting about the gut aspect of that and what the microbes are doing and what your gut microbiome is doing in general. So I get a lot of women who come to me and they say, my hormones are out of whack. I want my doctor to test my hormones. And she won't, or whatever. A lot of doctors won't run those tests for whatever reason. And so they are asking me about that. And I offered to them, let's look at your gut. Let's see what's going on down there first. Because likely, if your hormones are off, something probably is going on in your gut that's contributing to it. So it's kind of like, why would we not start at the beginning and address the root cause, which could be a gut imbalance? It could be, your bacterial levels are not where they should be, not at optimal levels, good or bad. It could be, one of those digestive organs is kind of funky or not doing its job so well. So we need to provide some support to that guy. It could be something like that. And so if we just immediately jump to, well, let's fix the hormones, we're forgetting about all of that. And chances are it's not going to fully resolve whatever that issue is.
And
So,
as you said earlier, it could be quite clear. Like, let's say if someone is constantly constipated, then literally there's going to be more toxins floating around because your body's not able to clear them out. And I mean, let's say we have an excess of estrogen or whatever hormone it might be. And then that's floating around, floating around, floating around, because your body's not able to clear that out. So once you, as you mentioned, like once you kind of address the digestive issue, it might automatically help the body clear things out. And the great thing is, with some of the tips that you've given, let's say overall eating more fiber, more vegetables, but perhaps in this case, more specifically, like cruciferous vegetables or so, we're automatically supporting the liver, and the liver is helping us like detox better, and therefore that's flushing it out. So, as you mentioned, you can't really address one without looking at the other. And the gut is a really, really great and a lot easier to observe sort of place, that because, as we said in the beginning, you can actually get your report every single day or every single time you go to the bathroom, right? So yeah, I think that's a really good point. And of course, again, also addressing the hydration, that's going to flow into that as well. One thing that I do often see affect the gut health and overall the body, the hormones, more negatively during that time of perimenopause and menopause is alcohol consumption. So things that people might have been able to get away with rather easily in their 20s and 30s, and like, I didn't change anything at all. My nutrition was exactly the same. In fact, I'm actually drinking less. I'm just having one glass every evening. Oop, okay, red flag right there. It would almost be better to have like two or three glasses once a night or once a week, not once a night, once a week, than having that habitual one glass every single day. I find that that tolerance just really goes down and affects then in a cascade gut health and then thereby hormones and so on also.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so interesting when we look at it from, that 30,000 foot view. Everything is connected. And I don't want people to be overwhelmed by that idea. I want it to be empowering, because if everything is connected, that means that if we just focus on, say, the gut, then everything else upstream can improve as well. So it really is empowering, and it's just so fascinating how the body The human body, like I've said it a few times, the human body is just fascinating because it can do that. It can grow, it can learn, it can heal itself, it can do what it needs to do to keep you alive. And
And as you said, like unfortunately, our body is so resilient, so it often doesn't speak up right away. But then if it's stressed for a longer period of time, then that's when we see the symptoms. But I think the wonderful thing about your field, about gut health in particular, is that on the flip side, once you start implementing more positive things, you do see effects rather quickly versus someone who's working on hormones, you might see improvements after 3 months, or someone who's trying to build muscle, you might actually see a visible muscle after 2 months or whatever. Whereas you get, oh, I didn't feel bloated at all today because yesterday I ate XYZ or so. So, yeah, I can imagine a very rewarding aspect of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's that immediate feedback loop that you get in many cases. It can take,
Yeah, of course.
quite a while,
But
depending
especially
on.
if there's like bacterial overgrowth or any kind of inflammation, as you mentioned, present, of course, that's a given. But yeah, Lindsay, thank you so much for your time. This has been a wonderful conversation. I will make sure to link your social media and of course, your ebook as well in the show notes so people can go and check it out and follow all your wonderful information. But I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Absolutely. That was an amazing conversation, and thanks for asking such great questions. This was fun.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lindsay. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.